One of the things that millions of people have planned to do, and many, 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 many have actually succeeded and executed that plan, is to see the new Star Wars and to see all the different movies. On the line with us now, we've got Blake Stubbs. He is the he's a former movie critic with 1470 WMDB. He is the host at Eberfest in Champaign. So Roger Ebert, one of the few people that could take being a movie critic and turn it into, you know, international and certainly national stardom. He is joining us, I think, from Peoria or something. So, Blake, welcome to WGN.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Glad to be here.
Happy New Year to you. And thanks so much for taking time out and joining our audience here in Chicago. So Roger Ebert is one of those guys. You know, when you can be in whatever business you were, you can change it to a point where you kind of redefine what somebody working at the top level in that business is, what they mean to the country. I mean, he was Chicago's, but he was also America's, right? I mean, he was big everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, one of the films I'm going to talk about here soon, the guy who directed it, wrote and directed it, owes a lot of his career to Roger Ebert and the fact that Roger hosted a film festival every year in Champaign, which was, you know, Roger's little hometown area, also where I went to school, which is how I sort of became involved with that festival. That, you know, he was just one of those guys where his words started to sort of resonate with audiences, not just those going to movies, but readers and newspapers. I mean, that's where they first came in contact with him. But he just sort of transcended the idea of a film critic and took it to the next level. And that's why he's one of my heroes. But he certainly, you know, made it so that people going to the movies knew a little bit more what they were getting into every time they went. And you can't really find a lot of people who don't know who Roger Ebert is.
Well, Blake, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask, as somebody who is so impacted by him and you know, carrying on and hosting the fest that he does in Champaign. What was it about him? Because, you know, movie critics, we've got so many, and now with kind of the advent of these different sites on the internet, almost everybody can kind of add their two cents. And so but it takes, you know, like 400 people on Rotten Tomatoes to equal just one Roger Ebert, you know, where you're like,
definitely. See, and actually that's one of the things that I love with his festival in particular. What he was always able to pull off in Champaign was this great amalgam of critics would come to town, and they would, you know, take part in panels and the Q&As, and they would make sure, especially after Roger lost his ability to speak, these critics started taking the stage and handling the Q&As. And the whole thing was, like, I have people that I consider friends now that I discuss movies with, like, the moment I get out of a theater. And, you know, the critics are just people like us, except, you know, what they get to do is they get to, you know, relay their thoughts to a wider audience. And Roger really sort of embraced the internet once he lost his ability to speak and found a whole new voice as a critic. So, I mean, like, we were just, you know, sort of highlighting that whole him transcending being a film critic. Like, he really took it to another level even again once he realized, like, look, I can't talk anymore, but there's nothing that says I can't type. And the fact I can type just gives me a whole new medium to really take hold. And he's inspired. There's at least probably five or six different critics that I only found online due to Roger Ebert sort of pointing me in that direction when they started to really sort of come into their own as critics.
As a critic, you know, we sort of enjoyed Roger for, you know, all the reasons, all the kind of practical reasons that you know and love him for, like, hey, does he think this movie is good? Is it worth my time? Is it worth my money? But, but for him, what made him a star initially, at least got him on the scene, was something, again, another thing that you could never plan for, you could never write a script for, is, you know, Gene Siskel, those two guys, through the process of them typically disagreeing, but always discussing, it just made, you know, movie review made really great theater. It made great television.
Right. The big thing, too, with especially with the dynamic that both he and Siskel had, for me, growing up watching them on television, was that I kind of felt like they were teaching me how to watch movies. And once I, you know, got into college, I started taking classes on film theory. And you know, they were referenced constantly because of what they did, you know, taking what were just words on paper that people would read about a movie and say, yeah, maybe I'll go see that this weekend. To then being on television and being in the living room every week, that just sort of, no one had ever really done that before. And the fact that they were able to communicate so well, and sometimes, you know, their dynamic, they didn't always agree. And it's known that they didn't always agree, but the mutual respect that they had for each other was what really made, you know, watching them every week sing to the public. And from then on, you know, they pretty much, I mean, they are the standard, and they always will be, I think, for a whole new era of either critics. And for me, like, I'm one of those people who, like, that is, it's not what I do full time. It's a passion. And so what I love to tell people is, like, look, you're as much a critic as I am to some degree. But the thing is that I just, you know, I practically live in movie theaters.
Right.
So I have sort of like a more of a breadth than most average moviegoers do. And sometimes I, you know, being from Peoria, like, we don't get all the things that, you know, land in Chicago, New York, L.A. So I make road trips up to see stuff when I can. And part of that is, you know, my love of movies comes from guys like Ebert and Siskel. I mean, they're the ones that sort of just kind of ushered me in, and, you know, they didn't tell me how to butter my popcorn, but they definitely told me what to look for when I went in to see a movie. And my appraisals of it, I owe, you know, a lot of that taste that I developed over many years from being a teenager watching them growing up to then finally being like, no, I'm starting to mature as a moviegoer. And I think that people do that over time. And I think that's great. Yeah. I think it's wonderful.
Well, we're thankful that you do spend so much time in the movies, and we're going to tap into some of that knowledge and some of that experience as we move forward in the program. We're going to take a really quick break now. And then when we come back, Blake Stubbs is going to talk. I want to get a little tiny bit of insight into what it is that you did learn from Roger Ebert, or what are the things that he did so well that you try to use and convey to the people who enjoy your reviews as well. And then we're going to talk about some of these big movies, and some of these big movies that are coming out now are the biggest in history. And in every good movie, especially as we look towards 2016, you're looking for a hero. I just saw Ant-Man, so we'll talk about that tone. But
absolutely,
callers can definitely text in with their favorite movie hero throughout history. 312-981-7200. We have Blake Stubbs. We'll be back with him talking movies and 2016. It's Daniel in 720 WGN.
Cowboy
hero. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio. It feels like New Year's Day, but it's actually, it's the second, just the beginning of the second day of January. So we are a culture that absolutely loves their movies, passionate about their movies, and we are blessed to have on the line with a guy who is not only taking that that love for the movies to the movies, but also then sharing that information with us. It's Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I wanted to get your thoughts. So many people influence not only on the viewer side, right, what movies to watch and where to go, but from a critic, like, what was it that he did that you said, yes, that is an important thing, and that is something I want to share with viewers as well?
Well, it's one of those, the key things that I always look for when I'm looking at what I think are like the best movies of the year, or what I think is going to be, you know, really recognized during awards season, because I think critical review sort of points audiences toward what's great, you know, and what to, I don't want to say avoid at the theaters, because in the end, you're going to see it if you want to see it or not, but the quality of a film, and quality usually leads to accolades. Accolades, you know, if you break down the criteria, for me, Roger and Gene used to talk about the cinematography of films quite a bit. Specifically, if you've ever watched Citizen Kane, for instance, which is arguably the greatest film of all time, and Roger has done extensive research on that film. He taught classes on that film, frame by frame. He did. There's a great audio commentary with Citizen Kane of Roger just walking you through the movie. And the cinematography, you know, how things are framed, why they shoot it that way, mise-en-scene, understanding the layers of what's in there. When they were doing their little back-and-forth banter, Roger and Gene could talk about that, and I could have just listened to a whole show talking about that. That was when I realized very early I was a movie lover. And from then on, you know, when they started talking about, look, this particular performance, I started to pay way more attention to performances as I got older. So for a while there, I just wanted to go see movies that looked good. You know, that was about it. That's all I really wanted when I was younger. But now I kind of want the whole enchilada. And they just sort of kicked off that whole, like, look, man, when you break a movie down, there's several little layers that you want to look at. And for me, it's, you know, how well is it directed and written? How well is it shot? How well is it acted? You know, how well do they direct these actors? Which is why I thought 2015 is actually one of the richest you know, years in movies, because I was trying to dig through and find my top five, and there's so many that I'm just like, this is an honorable mention, but it pains me to give it an honorable mention, but it's not in the top five. So, you know, like, it's one of those things where it becomes harder and harder for me, I guess, to sort of break down, like, what it is I look for and how I look for it. So then when I go to movies with people, as soon as it's over, I'm trying to, like, get in their ears and be like, look, this is what I love. What do you think?
Wow.
And being able to discuss a movie, you know, not just be like, oh, I liked it. Being able to discuss a movie tells you whether or not it was good or bad and why, because why is always what's most important.
What's cool, though, is to have that, you know, why the movie was good, you know, just from an entertainment mm-hmm. standpoint, like I really liked it, or I really got yeah. in, you know, and or I wasn't picking out problems with it. But what you said was really, really interesting, is that when you see enough of them and you see enough, I guess, probably bad movies or movies that you would yeah. want to be a little bit better, when they're really done well and you can understand everything from the acting, the directing, the cinematography, and you can get in there with those moving parts, right? And yeah. and be able to notice and kind of share some of the reasons why it was so great. But a lot of that's just lost on the viewers. So that's cool that you're able to kind of share those things with them that they would never mm-hmm. notice otherwise.
Absolutely. And then I'm one of those people who, you know, when I go to the movies, sometimes I like to take people and sometimes I like to go alone. Sometimes it depends on the director. You know, if Martin Scorsese puts out a movie, I usually want to go alone because I just want to digest, because he's Martin Scorsese. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those... That's one of those characters in the Hollywood like realm that I want to respect and be like, look, I got to pay attention to what Martin Scorsese is putting on the screen. But then some movies, like say The Force Awakens, that's a group watch thing. You got to take people and go with and experience it together. So sometimes Scorsese makes those group movies, but not always. You know, those are the ones I try to go and savor and just take in.
Well, we're kind of
an interesting little coin flip, I guess, if you want to.
We're letting people call in and text in with their favorite movie heroes. Some of the most important parts of movies
yeah.
is some of those heroes, like throughout the history. And so, you know, like you've got a Han Solo, right? In the Star Wars ones. We do 312-981-7200. People are texting in and calling in. Ike has his favorite movie hero. Ike, welcome to WGN.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Ike. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Okay, I have to say my favorite movie hero, and this is the hero that's not talked about in pop culture much, and I think he totally represents America, just like the character of Rambo, Snake Plissken from Escape from New York, played by Kurt Russell.
Snake Plissken. Okay, yeah. Wow, a post-apocalyptic, like, kind of bad guy, good guy. That's pretty cool. What do you think, Blake?
I absolutely agree. I think he's one of the more underrated, you know, heroes. Because the reason why we really connect, I think, as an audience with him is because, much like Han Solo, when you first meet Han Solo, Snake Plissken's very much an anti-hero. And then over time, you start to realize that he's your guy. And by the time the movie's over, that, you know, that American spirit, that hero by any means necessary type character, you're in love with him. I mean, you as an audience member, he's the guy you want saving your butt when you're in trouble. You know, that kind of thing. So yes, Snake Plissken, definitely. I think he is underrated, as Ike said, but I also think that he's definitely got a lot of weight. In fact, I mean, it's Kurt Russell too, man, and what a movie star Kurt Russell is. He's not just like an actor; he's a movie star, and those don't exist, you know, across the board anymore like they used to back in the classic Hollywood era.
Well, thanks, Ike. Happy New Year, and thanks for calling into WGN.
Thank you. You too.
All right, thanks. Now, Blake, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about too, is as far as movie stars. You know, there are some people
yes.
that are great actors or actresses. You know, Meryl Streep mm-hmm. is a great actress, and she's so many different characters in so many different movies. But then there's some people that are just like Robert Redford is just Robert Redford. You know, he's
yeah.
just playing himself. What's that dynamic for those actors that can kind of do that? I get away with, I guess, just being themselves in every movie.
There's just, I don't know, you know, it's funny because whoever, I'm not trying to like, you know, answer your question with a question, but my question when someone, because you're not the first person to ever ask me that. And my response is always, I think the person who can really answer that is going to be the first producer that gave that actor their shot. Who was it that found him and thought, that's going to be somebody someday? Because then they became an icon like Robert Redford, who now, you know, mostly directs and produces and runs the Sundance Film Festival. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, that guy just kind of did everything there was to do, and now he just does whatever he wants. And some movies, you know, you can say, like, Robert Redford, man, what a performance. He really brought it. But when you've been in so many things, then you do get sort of pigeonholed into this idea that, like, well, he's only really playing himself. I mean, another actor like that, I think, is James Spader. You know, James Spader made a splash in the 80s, playing pretty much the bad guy in like, Brat Pack films. Then he became a serious actor, working with Steven Soderbergh. And then if you watch him on television, because you can see him every week in, like, Blacklist, or for a while there, Boston Legal, or The Practice, people are like, oh, he's kind of just playing himself. And I'm like, ah, there's way more nuance to James Spader, but how much of James Spader have you seen? So there's, you know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a weird, like with Robert Redford, I mean, for me, like, the movies that I loved him in are, like, All the President's Men. Okay, that's a perfect example of a great Robert. And part of it's who he's working with. You know, like, they just bring out the best in him. But then sometimes you're like, you know, like, my mom loved Robert Redford. You know, she's a big Robert Redford fan, but he was just so handsome and, like, he's a movie star. But then I'm like, but there are movies where you could say Robert Redford, the actor. And those are probably the movies Robert Redford loved the most.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul Newman. Here's a great example. Paul Newman is probably the best example of this. That man could act. He could act like it was nobody's business. However, he was a movie star as well.
Yep.
Which meant he was in a lot of stuff, and you could probably name five movies off the top of your head, and you've probably never even seen everything he's done. But you just know because he's Paul Newman. But, like, for me, my favorite movie with Paul Newman, it's a tie. It's between Slapshot, which, if I remember my trivia about him correctly, that's his favorite movie he ever made.
Nice.
You know, he had more fun making that movie than he did anything else.
Oh, wow.
But the other movie that I love him in more than just about anything he ever did was The Hustler.
Oh.
The Hustler is my number four movie of all time, and I love just trying to get people to watch it, especially people, you know, my age. Because I'm 30 years old, and I found The Hustler when I was, like, 25. I was like, wow, where's this movie been my whole life? This is one of the coolest movies I've ever seen.
Wow, and
I try to get people to sit and watch it, and it's usually a success, but it's kind of hard because it's black and white, and it's older, and, you know, there's a lot of things people are like, really, do we have to watch that? And I'm like, give it 10 minutes. And tell me you're not interested after 10.
He is one of the coolest guys too. And so, you know, ultimately at the bottom line, the studios are there to make some money. And so if they can have a marketable star that people just will come and show up and buy tickets for and see, and, you know, like a current one, like Vince Vaughn comes to mind, and he's one. And we'll talk about this as soon as we get back from the break as well. But so you can have movie stars that are, like, bankable, iconic people. You hope they're themselves, at least their fans do when they show up. And then you've got these franchises. And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about Star Wars, one of the biggest movie franchises of all time. This incarnation of it, biggest opening and probably going to be the biggest money-making movie of all time as well. It's Dane Neal in Studio 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in until 5 a.m. John Hansen under the weather this morning. And the weather's kind of calm right now, but it is going to be a beautiful day. Thank you, Joey. Appreciate that. And thanks to you, too, for coming up with the song. A guy on the line with us now is helping us make sense of all the things that are going on in the movie world, helping us come to grips with some of our favorite heroes throughout the history of movies, and sharing some of those people that kind of straddle that line between actor, movie star, or both. Some of the texts that we've got in, and of course you can add yours as well at 312-981-7200. So Blake, they've got James Caan is one of their favorite heroes, Thief. And that's Mike from Worth, Bruce Willis from Die Hard, Humphrey Bogart. Well, there's a difference, right? Those
Humphrey
are some of their favorite heroes.
Someone
had mentioned, I don't know if he's a hero, but George Clooney. And then, of course, even though Paul Newman may love Slapshot, the fans, of course, that was a huge favorite, like a cult favorite, but also like Cool Hand Luke. You know, what we have here is a failure to communicate. So on the line with us, Blake Stubbs, former movie critic with 1470 WMBD and a host at Eberfest in Champaign. The biggest movie franchise, probably at least one of them. I mean, when we're in the middle of a Harry Potter situation, we think maybe that. But Star Wars has been so big for so long, and this one may be the biggest ever.
Absolutely. You know what? I was recently on the show right after Star Wars, and I got to tell you, I'm a lifelong fan. I was not disappointed by The Force Awakens. I like where this is going. And that was always kind of hard to say because, you know, the prequels are very divisive. You know, there's people that don't like the prequel trilogy. They only, you know, hold the original trilogy to be Star Wars. I may or may not be one of those people. I don't want to go too deep on that. But definitely, you know, this franchise with this film, it could become the biggest film of all time. That is true. You mentioned that right before the break. And the getting the movie stars to come out for it, like Harrison Ford, didn't exactly hurt their chances. So, you know, that and to be fair to Harrison Ford, that man can act. And he definitely brought it in that film as well. Yeah. So
now,
yeah, it's one of those things when I keep talking about movie stars. Sorry, I just keep going to this whole thing where I'm like, you know, inside every movie star is a real actor. There's a part they were always born to play. He's had a couple of them. If you want to talk about Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones being one of them,
and
Han Solo being another one. But then look at movies like Witness. You know, he was nominated for that. And then you've got, you know, The Fugitive, which, I mean, I know Tommy Lee Jones won the Oscar for, but it's hard not to forget Harrison Ford in that. Regarding Henry, first time he worked with J.J. Abrams, another great performance. So there's more to Harrison Ford than just, you know, big budget, big dollars. There's some really true great acting performances there too.
Well, here's the thing, you know, with Star Wars especially, they have kind of this built-in fan base, built-in audience, built-in merchandising, and it's like when, you know, critics were reviewing The Hunger Games, where they basically said, well, it's not that great of a movie, but if you like it, if you're a fan of the series, you're going to enjoy it. So for this one, you're saying this one can stand on its own. It is going to certainly appeal to Star Wars fans. But for those Star Wars fans that are looking for something that's really going to be a great story, it's there too.
Yes. And in fact, this is one of those things where with this movie being as big as it is, okay, and you know, the franchise, you know, having this great legacy and the merchandising making it really hard to not know what Star Wars is. The people who, you know, may have never seen Star Wars could walk into this movie, because there are those people out there that just Star Wars missed them, you know, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I want to go with you when you see it the first time. I want to see what you think about it. But The Force Awakens could be walked in completely blind. If you could walk out and have had a great time in a theater and probably have a lot to talk about afterwards. That's a very good thing, especially for a film that's making as much money as it is.
Now, I know the paychecks were probably decent for, you know, some of our favorite actors and characters from those first movies. But do you think, you know, when they're established and they don't need to do it, did the script have to be good to get Harrison Ford to participate? Probably.
Without talking too much about the film and I mean, knowing that he is a primary character in it, it did have to be good. In fact, I don't think they would have got him. I think money, this is probably, he could end up, I think, from this film, be the highest paid actor on one film ever. That's something that, you know, once it's all like tallied up, they could look at that and say, look, you know, I mean, he's tied in with, he's got a 0.5% of the profits on this film tied in on top of his fee to just appear in the film. So he's going to get paid in perpetuity because Star Wars is never going out of style. So it's one of those things where, like, and that's just this film. You know, I mean, think about the fact that he made, I think, like $10,000 when he did A New Hope.
Right.
So that tells you right there, like, he's come a long way. And he definitely, for this, I think that it's warranted 100%. I think if you wanted to get this back on track and make it so that it was, you know, unequivocally lovable for Star Wars fans, Harrison Ford had to be in this movie. And in my opinion, if the man wants his money, pay him his money, because he's Han Solo and we want Han Solo back. You know what I mean? You'd be hard pressed to get me to love it as much as I do if Han Solo just wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could have actually missed Star Wars. I was there back in you know, 1977, you know, watching the first one as a kid in the theaters. I was there at the Zares trying to get a hold of one of the Star Wars action figures. Of course, they were sold out. You know, it was difficult to get them. So I've been there. And then I've got now a 9-year-old son who just went with his uncle and saw the IMAX 3D version, where we just had kind of giant theater blur vision. And so he saw that. But he's been exposed to the Star Wars kind of franchise the whole time. They've got so many cartoons and the Clone Warriors and all of this, and so many of the kind of team photo of either characters or type of characters, you know, everyone's kind of familiar with, and he absolutely loved it. So we got a hold of those first few movies and watched those. I think it was after he came back, so he could see some of the prequels, and I'm surprised at what they were able to do special effects wise back then, right? When they didn't have all of those tools. But back then, I mean, you'll remember this, Blake, it was mind blowing, you know, when you saw what they were doing.
That was one of those things. My dad was there, tried to be there day one in 77 to see A New Hope. And when I was being introduced to movies as a kid, when I was little, I mean, we're talking like, you know, 5, 6 years old, and you watch a movie with dad. Star Wars was one of the first things I remember watching with him. And he always said every time, and it was one of those things where, like, I know he knows he's told me this, but I know he loves to tell this every time. The special effects in that movie were so far ahead of everything they had ever seen at the time in movies that was really one of the biggest reasons why it's so beloved. You know, that's why people love it so much. And it's because it took them and did what movies by nature should do, and it transported the audience to some place completely new that they had never been before. That's why Star Wars still kicks with a lot of people. It really just, it clicks, I should say, with a lot of people. And what I love is that you have, like you just said, your 9-year-old went and saw it with an uncle, and they both walked out with smiles on their faces. I'd be really interested to have two separate conversations with them about Star Wars and be like, look, you know, for uncle who's been around and knows the franchise, what did you think about this? And for the young guy, I want to say, hey, what did you think of this? What, like, how did you take all this in? Because, I mean, your 9-year-old is around a lot of technology-filled movies. You know, special effects are kind of hard to impress younger crowds with. This movie still impresses younger crowds, and some of it's the same old tricks they used in the 70s.
Yep. Yep. I mean, no, you're right, and that's a great point, too, because Star Wars the Original came out when it was the only thing doing anything like this, and now, of course, you have, you know, Avengers, and you have Iron Man, and you have Captain America, and you have all these movies, all with a lot of the same, at least, capabilities, right, of doing things on the visual side. Well, this is definitely going to be one of the top 5 movies for 2015, probably, and we're saying probably one of the biggest movies, if not the biggest of all time. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, Blake is going to go through the top 5 movies of 2015. You can do your suggestions as well, 312-981-7200. You can text them in and give your thoughts or even your favorite top 5 movies for this year. We'll talk about some of your favorite heroes as well when we come back. It's Dane Neal on 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio with you until 5 a.m. talking something that people, I think, are going to be doing a lot over the weekend. They're going to be watching movies. One of the movies that they're going to be watching, at least according to the ticket sales, is, of course, Star Wars. On the line with us now, we've had him. He is a former movie critic with 1470 WMDB and one of the hosts at EbertFest in Champaign, the one and only Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome back.
Thanks for having.
So we've had a number of people texting in and calling in as far as their heroes. And then, all, of course, that kind of dynamic, whether it's a movie star or whether it's an actor, a guy who I think is considered to be a pretty good or a really good actor, but he is definitely his own quirky self in most things, is Christopher Walken. That's one of the suggestions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And Christopher Walken is just one of those guys where right now, I mean, for the audiences, like the wide breadth of audiences that love him, right, you could just like put him in a movie doing an impression of himself for 90 minutes and everybody would love it. Like, that's just that Christopher Walken. Everybody,
I just need
loves
more cowbell. You
know? Well, cowbell. Yeah, I mean, get yourself
you can
a chicken.
You never have too much cowbell, ever. Ever.
Oh, right, exactly. And you know what? That's one of the things that I guess when you you have kind of that thing that resonates with people, I guess he had done it. That's what people say to him as he's walking down the street. People aren't talking about some of the more successful or serious movie roles. They're just saying more cowbell in the airport to him.
Right. However, as much as anyone should love Christopher Walken, and it's worth it to do so, you have to see him in The Deer Hunter. And then you know why everybody thinks he's this incredible actor, because he truly is. And he won a very well-deserved Academy Award for that performance. So that's one of those, like, I want to make sure people know Christopher Walken isn't just this, like, character. He is a true actor's actor. And you can find that in The Deer Hunter. I mean, there's other films, but The Deer Hunter is probably the seminal performance that you have to check out if you're a fan of Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not a super pleasant movie, but there's
no,
some amazing acting in it. 6'3" also offered Joseph Cotten in The Third Man as a favorite hero in a film, bumbling through his life, had to make a gut-wrenching decision, and he doesn't get the girl. So it doesn't always end, you know, with a happy ending, and you still get some great heroes out of that.
Exactly. No, and that's one of those, I was going to say, Joseph Cotten, you know, and your frequent collaborator with Orson Welles. I mean, those guys, they put out some quality stuff. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if you want to talk about, like, a hero as an actor, and this is funny thing, when you say greatest all-time heroes, I'm like, am I thinking characters? Am I thinking actors? And I'm just like, you know what? You could have huge discussions on both ends. I mean, sometimes for me, it's like, well, Indiana Jones, but that's Harrison Ford. You know, I can't right. decide which one I want to talk about more. So, yeah, no, I mean, I love, like, all these suggestions have been great. It's one of those things where I'm like, if you don't know, or, like, you know an actor's name, you're like, you know what, I haven't watched one of their movies in a while. Put one of them in. And I want to throw out there, too, Daisy Ridley in The Force Awakens, she's going to be everybody's hero in the next few years because she's so splendid in that film. Yes, absolutely. Mark my words, please. If you take anything away from anything I've said tonight, Daisy Ridley is going to be a thing. Joe, I'm really happy about it.
Joey in the booth is nodding in agreement as well. And I wanted to mention too, Robert gave a call in and he had said that he has such a big fan. He was a fan of Paul Newman for sure, but on the Star Wars side still has unopened toys that he has. So on the merchandising side, Star Wars has really kind of done the full 360 on how to benefit from a movie. And so it is definitely going to be one of the best movies or the top five movies of 2015. But we did get a text from someone else that says that they're calling us Star Wars fanboys. And I guess we are. But we're not alone.
We are.
773 saying Fury Road is the best movie of the year. Definitely up for the awards.
I'm going to talk about Fury Road. I have not forgotten the Fury Road fans out there. No. Trust me, I'm with you on that as well. I can Star Wars fanboy for hours, but Fury Road really hit me when I saw it this year.
Well, let's talk about it. And here's part of the reason is one of my favorite movies of all time was the original Road Warrior. It was like the original movie. I mean, I loved every bit about it, you know, whether it was the music or just kind of the post-apocalyptic, we need gas and all the different crazy characters that went along with it. When they said that not only was going to have the original director, but they were going to remake that movie, I'm like, how can you do it? But they did.
They did. And you know what? Depending on the day and which one I've watched most recently, Fury Road outdoes it. It's one of those things where, like, I could change, you know, if I watch Road Warrior tomorrow, I could probably change my opinion back because I just love Road Warrior so much. But Fury Road, man, that was a whole new thing if you went and saw that in a theater. And that's sort of what that's what Road Warrior was when people saw that. You know, that became sort of a template for how you made an action film for about 20 or 30 years. And then George Miller came back and made Mad Max Fury Road, and now he's redefined the template that he set in place 30-plus years ago. And that's one of the reasons why Fury Road, I think, is one of the best films of the year, without question. And in fact, like, it's one of those things where I was trying to go through, like, all this stuff that I saw, and I, you know, Fury Road didn't come out late in the year. It came out in May. So, you know, in the height of, you know, Avengers and all these other crazy things, Fury Road was the best thing I saw throughout, you know, the first, well, I would say 3/4 of the year, up until, you know, you get into Oscar season and all these big contenders are coming out, and of course, Star Wars was the big event film. But yeah, Mad Max Fury Road, from the performances to the direction to the acting, the cinematography, the style of it, it was just...
Well, Blake, don't you think, too, that it's... I mean, it has to be really, really good in order to kind of transcend some of those typical restrictions based on either reviews or the awards, because it's everything that your normal movie that's considered a top, you know, five movie. I mean, and I'm not talking about box office. I'm just talking from reviews. And then on the award season, it's everything. None of those movies are.
Right. Well, and see, the thing about Fury Road is that it has this weird sort of, people, you know, like to say, like, oh, the script, you know, there wasn't much of a story. I'm like, that's the whole reason why this is something new. You're not going in to see the same thing. And it is practically a 2-hour chase. You know, it's a 2-hour action packed with a few breaks here and there to let you, the audience, catch your breath. But man, the action was so incredible and over the top that you couldn't look away when you were watching it. That tells you right there that it's a great film. And it may not be, because it's an action film, maybe you don't think it's a great film. You know, what great action films are there? It's usually the dramas or, you know, something that's really heart wrenching that takes home Best Picture as a trophy. But to be honest with you, Fury Road's got to be in the top. it's got to be in the top 10 of the year come Oscar time. But it's in my top five this year. It was one of the best experiences I had in the theater.
312-981-7200. People are calling in and texting in with their thoughts on not only their favorite movie hero of either this year, of course, of all time, but also some of their top movies from 2015. John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, and Steve McQueen have all been added to the roster. And I don't think you can quarrel with any of those guys.
No, you can't deny that. Those are three of the baddest dudes to ever walk in front of a camera. Easily. No question. I wouldn't mess with any of them. I wouldn't even try to joke with any of them, let alone mess with them.
That's awesome. So for 2015, we've got at least one of the movies that's in your top five, but what are the other four?
The other four, there was a movie called Room that is out now. You can maybe catch it at a theater. It stars Brie Larson, who would probably be my current front runner for Best Actress this year, directed by Lenny Abrahamson. It's actually a independent film. And as I know it, it's an independent film. It's very small. It's about a woman who was abducted and had a child while in captivity. And they live in just a room, a shed. And she tries to make this young man, you know, grow up. He's about 5 years old and tries to make him have a life. And then the hope is that they can get out and she can, you know, save her son. It's insanely compelling. I mean, from start to finish, I was hooked. And Brie Larson, you know, with Short Term 12, which came out in the last couple of years, really sort of turned some heads as far as her dramatic chops go. And she's an incredible talent, just, you know, from, you know, how beautiful she is, how talented she is. But this movie, this is one of those real heart-wrenching performances that you just, like, you won't be able to look away once you start seeing it. So Room is probably my number two movie of the year, for sure. And I'm not really saying my top five in any particular order, but number two on that top five list, Room definitely gets a C.
Okay,
and
good.
Moving, yeah.
Well, good to see Room. And I mean, we've only got a couple minutes left, so I do want to run through them a little bit. But what a contrast, right? You've got intergalactic good versus evil with every kind of thing and creature you can imagine. And you've got people in a room, right? All great movies.
Yeah, people in a room. And then the other three big ones, Star Wars is one of them. That was the movie of the year. That was the event that everyone had to go to and everyone will go to. And it's kind of hard to avoid it. In fact, if you haven't seen it, and I won't spoil anything because I think everyone needs to see this as pure as they can, go out and see Star Wars. You owe it to yourself as a movie lover if you love movies. Also, I have to give a big shout-out to a movie called 99 Halts, which I actually saw at Eberfest this year before it was officially out, directed by Ramin Barani, who is the director I was talking about earlier that, you know, his career, Roger Ebert really loved his work, and rightfully so. 99 Homes is not a movie you should miss. It definitely tackles some real issues, and it absolutely is one of those things that the performances are just so raw and the direction is so tight and great. And then finally is DiCaprio's big movie, The Revenant, where he teamed up with Alejandro Iñárritu, excuse me. But that is the most beautifully shot film of the year, and a close second for that best shot category would be The Hateful Eight. I think those two are going to duke it out in best cinematography. But The Revenant is hard to look away from, and it's grueling, and it's intense, and I would be very hard-pressed to see anybody walk away with Best Actor other than DiCaprio this year.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you, is this finally what gets it done? And then people are saying, too, that this is the vehicle almost created specifically for that purpose.
Yeah, I actually, you know what? If DiCaprio retires after this, I don't know what he can do to top it. And I've followed his career, man. I'm a fan. You know, like when I was young and he was the pretty boy in Titanic, I didn't like him. But as I grew older, I watched like everything he ever did. And I realized this guy is an actor and a movie star, just going back to our conversation earlier. But this film, man, this performance is so raw. I mean, the stories you can read about like what the production was like are intense in and of themselves. They sound like they're straight out of a Werner Herzog story. So I can't stress enough that DiCaprio, for me, he won me over, man. He's 100% best actor this year.
It's going to be exciting to see that, to see all the movies on the list. And of course, it's so great for the listeners to have you to kind of share not only your perspective, the thought process, the movies, and be able to share so many things. We're blessed that you are spending so much time watching movies and then spending so much time with us here on WGN tonight. So it's Blake Stubbs. And so, Blake, let people know where they can keep up with you on social media, catch up with all your adventures.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter @BlakeStubbs. And I try to tweet about movies as much as I can. When I get out of them, I usually give at least some kind of brief 140 character reaction. As of late, you know, The Hateful Eight's probably the thing I just most recently saw. So I'm going to actually put up, I've been trying to, you know, digest that movie because it's 3 hours long over the last couple days. But it was definitely worth checking out in a theater, especially in 70 millimeter if you can. 70 millimeter, oh, I could have done a whole show tonight just about that.
So,
I love it.
So Blake Stubbs on Facebook, do you got a Twitter handle?
Yeah, at Blake Stubbs. You can find me, Blake Stubbs on Facebook and at Blake Stubbs, BLAKESTUBBS on Twitter.
All right. Thanks, Blake. Thanks so much for taking time out, sharing your thought process, for being on WGN as well. And Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you guys, too. And hopefully I'll see some of you at the movies.
All right, Blake. That is Blake Stubbs.